I feel like Dancing at the Cat's Meow was kind of me being the Raj of Mardi Gras.
You were the Raj of my heart.
Okay.
For those of you that have never seen...
You're going to murder me later?
Maybe. But for those that have never seen Mark dance, let me tell you.
It's a thing.
Seeing him dance on, like, if you see the video of it, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But watching it in person gave me fucking life.
Hello, friends and savory inferiors. Welcome to Vampire Insider, an unofficial podcast dedicated to recapping and reacting to AMC's new television series that reimagines Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and is part of the Immortal Universe. In each episode, hosts Joanne Palumbo, Christina LaRusso, and myself, Mark Snedeker, summarize the episode, talk about Easter eggs, discuss standout characters, interrogate inconsistencies between the book and the series, dissect our favorite characters and their arcs, and provide a body count. Please join us now as we dive into Episode 7, The Thing Lay Still. I would like to greet my co-host now. Welcome, Christina LaRusso.
Hi, Mark Snedeker. Hi, Joanne Palumbo.
Hello. Why are we being formal using first and last names?
Hi, Mark. I don't know, Joanne Palumbo. Hi, why don't you tell me?
Okay. How are you guys doing tonight?
Well, we are on the brink of a hurricane.
That's correct.
I don't mean the tasty drink at Pat O'Brien's either. I mean a serious rain and windstorm, probably only a category one. There is a real possibility we could lose power. So we are going to briskly move through this episode and see if we can get it done before that.
Threat of a hurricane. At your backs, you're here podcasting, and I applaud you both.
All right, so let's get started with this episode, the final episode of season one. Christina, hot trash, hot take, go.
Oh, it was everything. It was such a great episode. I loved it. It answered some questions.
I'd say so.
Did it hurt a little bit, Christina?
No, you know what? There's no ego in this. Oh. This is just
okay.
Just said that.
I was wrong about my guess about David, but I wasn't too far off.
No.
And we had initially toyed with the idea that it was Armand.
Yeah, that was the low-hanging fruit.
It was. And we'll get there when we talk about it. While it answered some questions, it left some other things unanswered. And so it's a great end to the first season that leads off now. I'm dying to see what they're going to do with season two. Joanne, what did you think of it?
Well, first, I do think we need to give Dorian credit because they were the first one that came to us with the theory of Rashid being Armand. So shout out to Dorian.
They don't call themselves Dorian anymore. Now they're called Lestat's left armpit. Kudos to Dorian / Lestat's left armpit. You got it. You got it right.
I thought it was a great episode. I loved the twists and the turns, the surprise of it not being one of the twins. That was the poison. I like that she chose Tom Anderson because she knew Lestat's ego was going to get the better of him because he referred to Lestat as him. She really did manage to stay those five steps ahead. There was fortunately a little hiccup there with Louis at the end, but it was a masterful plan. I saw a lot of people say that there was some issues with the timing of it and everything. I didn't have an issue with that. I felt that it flowed. I was happy with the amount of time they spent on each thing, and I thought it was great. And yeah, cannot wait for season two or part two, I believe they're calling it.
I mean, this is what you want from a season finale. You want them to answer some questions, but then set up season two, which obviously they did. We now know who Rashid is, although we have many, many, many questions about that. We saw the feeble attempted murder of Lestat, which was carried out by Laurel and Hardy, I think.
Oh, that's on. Not fair.
Well, look.
No, that's not
dude,
fair.
The,
she was
the
on
kill
point.
Didn't.
It was Louis.
She had a Mission Impossible episode right up until the point where they had to kill Lestat, and they failed in that miserably.
She would have done it. He didn't.
Like maybe accidentally spill some kerosene and light a match. You know what I mean? Like, get it done, Claudia. But great episode, super dramatic, lots of great murders during the party. Body count is stacking up. Just a really amazing episode.
So let's talk about book versus show. Obviously, never, none of this happened in the book. Certain elements of it, like the plotting of Lestat's murder, Claudia bringing the twins. Joanne, you mentioned bringing the twins into it, but then there's a left turn. It's not right. The twins. The readers all thought, oh, it's going to be one of the twins.
Yeah, it's laudanum in their blood, mm-hmm. or he's going to accidentally drink dead blood. That's going to fuck him up pretty good, and they're going to dump him in the swamp.
Didn't happen.
No, super didn't.
Lestat's murder was different. In the book, Claudia is the one that stabs him.
Yeah.
Claudia is the one that does really all of it. Then before they leave for Europe, they put him in the swamp and then he comes back and then they burn him down with the house. Okay. Right. So in the series, we have Louis slitting Lestat's throat, which was, oh my God.
Did you catch that he used the knife from inside his cane?
He used his cane knife, which impressed Lestat so much in episode one.
Not only did it impress Lestat, but Louis said in the first episode, I wanted to slit his throat with my knife.
When he meets him at the fair play, we're at a point here where lots and lots of things are changing. We discovered at the end that Rashid is actually the vampire Armand.
I have a lot to say about that, by the way.
He, at the time of the first interview in 1973, in the book, was done with Armand. He talks about that in the book, that they were together and then they broke it off.
And in fact, they'd been apart for quite some time.
And they'd been apart for some time when Louis had that first interview in 1973. We know from Daniel's dream and from Armand saying to Daniel at the end that he actually prevented Louis from killing Daniel, that Armand was still very much in the picture. They may have done this because they made the story start in 1910. It's a compressed timeline. I'm just kind of scratching my head going, well, where do we fit this into the timeline? One would expect we're going to see Armand and Louis break up because Lestat's going to come back and get his man back.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want Lestat? He's an MTV star. Of course, he's, you know, a little bit over the hill now because, you know, that was back in the 80s.
I know. So he can't be an MTV star. He's probably going to become an influencer.
Maybe he's a podcaster.
He could be.
We have plenty of competition.
The way that they've made these choices to alter the timeline, I am really enjoying. Next season, when we come back, I don't know if it's going to be worthwhile to have the book versus the show segment.
Oh, no, I think at that point, all bets are off.
Yeah, I think that we have to understand that.
Maybe we'll just once every podcast, I'll go, it's very different from the book. We'll just move on.
And I mean, but I'm very happy with it. So let's talk about this as if this was our last book versus show segment and kind of go around the table and say, how did we like what they did with the changes from the book to the TV series? What did we maybe miss from the book versus the TV series? And then just we'll say farewell to this as our last book versus show segment.
For me, I think we would be a little remiss if we don't include also the movie. Overall, I like the series the best, better than the book, of course, better than the movie. For me, it's because I'm drawn so much by Sam Reed and Jacob Anderson, their portrayal of Louis and Lestat are more in line with what I guess I had in my head. And I just think that, and this is hard for me to say because I love Brad Pitt, but Jacob Anderson's Louis obviously puts him to shame. Sam Reed destroyed Tom Cruise. I know I had asked that question early on Twitter or made the point that they, you know, that both had very big shoes to fill. And not only did they fill them, they just completely busted through them. If these guys don't win every single award that there is to win, the system is rigged. I'm not upset to see this segment go because I just think this show stands on its own. And I think that we need to give it that space now.
For me, it's not as meaningful a question as it is for you guys. I like the book. I liked the movie. Love the show. I'm not as concerned about continuity among the three things. To me, it stands alone. I mean, I like to talk about the differences just because it's interesting analysis. And it does make our job a little harder when we're trying to read tea leaves. I'm fine with that. Make our job more difficult. That's super fine. I don't want it to be super easy. There was enough faithfulness to the spirit of the book that really people should quit crying about it.
You know, I think that the people who are crying about it, from what I have seen, have been people who have been giving it bad reviews on IMDb.
Yeah.
And those people, I don't even know how serious they are about the book. What they are serious about is their racism. Of the three of us, I am by far probably the most book purist.
Correct.
But I was happy to see that they were going to be doing a television series, obviously, or we wouldn't be doing a podcast. The thing about the book that I'm disappointed that they did not follow through on more specifically was the age of Claudia, not the race. I don't care if they changed the race, all of that. The age for me, and I've said that all along, because that tiny baby vampire is terrifying and tragic, and I like that image. But Bailey Bass has done a fabulous job. I've grown to really love this Claudia.
Yeah.
And I am very, very happy with everything that they've done in the series. I couldn't be happier, honestly. This is just so rich.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Mark, it does stay true to the spirit of the characters. I'm glad that we did this segment in these first 7 episodes, and we'll still refer back to the books because you can't help but do that.
Right.
But I'm glad to let this segment go, and we'll find another equally interesting segment to plug in.
Right.
Okay, so now we're going to pause for a very special invitation.
You are cordially invited to the crew of Raj Mardi Gras Ball, Tuesday, February 6th, 8 p.m. sharp. Join hosts Lestat and Louis to celebrate the Savage Garden of Earthly Delights Masquerade Ball that will surely be the talk of New Orleans for all of eternity. As the guests dine and the music plays, your hosts will select a small group of esteemed attendees to join them at their home at 1132 Rue Royale for an after party. RSVP to Claudia at NO-56847.
Now we're going to move on to Easter Egg of the Week, which is tough to find in really a primarily action-driven episode like this. But, you know, we don't give up that easily.
So I have something. It's when they're talking about where they're going to go. And Louis suggested Greece. And Lestat says something about the sun and something else. And then he said, and then there's those that must be kept.
So he's talking about the vampires. There's two Egyptian ancestor vampires, and they have now essentially turned to stone. They are they who must be kept. And Marius is the one who's minding them. And Marius is the creator of Armand.
And the way they became vampires was very confusing. Like, he had a lot of cuts and this demon could just get into his body or whatever. It was very
well
strange.
Yes. And then once you get to Prince Lestat and the Kingdom of Atlantis, then you find out more about.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
So they're the OG vampires and they have to be protected because if they're destroyed, all vampires croak or something.
Yeah,
horrible.
If they're destroyed, then the rest of the vampires will, because all vampires come from them and they...
Like, they were left out in the sun once and all the other vampires were bursting into flames. It was really, you know, pretty horrible.
Got it.
Okay. So that's who they are.
Good one, Joni.
I've been seeing a lot online where people are talking about Claudia. Now, we know in the Ricean lore that all vampires are at the very least bisexual. All vampires are fluid with their sexuality.
They like variety.
People are commenting on Claudia and they are mentioning the fact that her fashion choices are kind of coding for them LGBTQ. And then someone was mentioning how Claudia has an affinity for Emily Dickinson, which we do know.
Right.
Now, Emily Dickinson is a poet who people are looking into her past and saying it looks like she may have been a lesbian based on some letters that they've uncovered. And now there's a historical thread where people are trying to sort of say, well, was she gay? Maybe she was, and exploring that. Given Claudia's fashion stylings and her affinity for Emily Dickinson, some people online are theorizing that she's actually a lesbian. Here we go. So the piece that she and Lestat play during the scene where they're talking at the piano and she's about to propose her plan to him, they play Claude Debussy's 6 Epigraphes Antiques. The movement that they're playing is part 1. For calling upon Pan, god of the summer wind. Now, here we go. Follow me down yet another rabbit hole.
Pan is a bit of a libertine.
Well, it's not even that. This particular piece, Debussy took measures from a different work that he had written for one of his friends who wrote erotic poems.
He definitely did.
Called Les Chansons de Bilitis.
Okay. Yes.
So if Claudia knows all this,
I'll tell you what, if that's how the writers are trying to tell us this, can you just make us work a little less hard than this? Like maybe give us a little better clue.
I know that I'm reaching, but I like to do this kind of digging, and I absolutely could be wrong. It could just be because she wants to say to him, she wants to flatter him when she walks.
And give him a French
and give him a composer. French piece because she says French music for French hands. And and he's been playing Bach. And there's a little bit of sniping over Bach being
for the master race.
For the master race that Claudia wants to point out that, you know, Lestat, you're a racist.
Wagner would have been a better choice there.
However, if you really want to play Debussy, why would you not play Clair de Lune?
Right.
That's the one that everybody knows.
Well, maybe they didn't want to make it obvious.
All right. So that was it. Easter eggs were hard to come
by. And
by
the way, I was watching when we were back in 2022. No paintings on the walls. So it's like the writers are saying, okay, we gave you plenty of Easter eggs. Now pay attention to the fucking show.
For me, this week, standout character was a little tough. Christina, who is your standout character?
Claudia for me. And if we want to be more precise, maybe the tragic anti-hero of the piece in a way that she wasn't when she was the baby body Claudia. And here's why. She keeps trying. She keeps trying to get away. Little Claudia couldn't do that in the book.
Right. This, you can't just hop a train when you're six
right.
or whatever.
This Claudia, she didn't want to be in that situation anymore. She tried to get away. First time, ran into Bruce. It was not a great experience for her. Obviously, it was a terrible, violent experience for her. And she ended up going back home. Second time she tried to get away, Lestat came and threatened to kill her. She had to become extraordinarily manipulative in order to get away. She was not wrong, moreover, to want to get away. She should want to get away. These two guys are bad guys, but both of them. She really should have wanted to get away from Louis. Yeah. And he even said to her, you think you need me, but you don't. She did her best to do what was the right thing to do. And she had too many obstacles in her path. All these roadblocks were thrown up. So she had to resort to creating this extremely intricate plot and outsmart Lestat. We had a listener question us about the use of the word manipulative, but I want to talk about it a little bit here in terms of manipulation. I'm not saying that in a negative way. Claudia has no choice but to be, because her body is not strong enough to fight against fully adult vampires. She certainly is stuck in this toxic triangle with these two knuckleheads, and she's doing what she needs to do to survive. Women historically often had to be manipulative because they were subject to the patriarchy. So when I say Claudia did manipulative things, good for her, because she was doing what she needed to do. Now, here is where the tragic flaw comes in with Claudia for me. She underestimates the bond between Louis and Lestat, or one could say she underestimates Louis's weakness or overestimates his strength. Louis is just this kind of hapless dude. And Jacob Anderson does a good job of making him not look that way. But when it comes down to crunch time, Louis fails her again. In the series, Louis has pushed her into this life that she didn't ask to be in by demanding and begging Lestat to turn her. But when he has the opportunity to allow her to really escape, and himself as well, he holds both of them back and he damns her, assuming that in the second season, they're going to go through with it and kill Claudia. Assuming that happens, then Louis has damned her twice. Bailey Bass's performance, my God, how she mocked him when he was dying, Lestat. You could see the little 14-year-old girl in her when she sat down and very self-satisfied dipped her pen in his bleeding neck and wrote his last words. And I wondered,
that was incredible.
That was amazing. That was such a great touch, because I thought about episode 6, where there was this big change in her, right? You didn't see her as the serial killer Claudia who was going around collecting body parts and last words, but she is still collecting last words. She's just gotten smarter about how she's handling it. And she has now Lestat's last words, which were, put me in my coffin, Louis, Louis.
So for me, it was Lestat for this episode. That's who I finally settled on, because he had to go through the planning of this trip to Buenos Aires, the planning of the party, all while knowing the love of his life and Claudia, who he cares for in some weird Lestat way, were plotting to kill him. He tricked them as much as they tricked him. Yes, well, they knew.
Not that, quite as much.
Actually, I'm going to stand by that as much. Because while going through that, imagine, you know, someone that you love is plotting to kill you, and you not only have to pretend not to know and play along, but he also had the wherewithal to create Antoinette and set them up that way. Yes, in the end, Claudia knew that Antoinette was following her, but didn't quite work out the way he wanted, obviously. To me, to be able to go through a situation like that and still almost pull off the ultimate betrayal on them made him my standout character. And I just thought, Sam Reed, I don't even have words for how good of an actor that man is. The way that he has portrayed Lestat, I just can't fathom any other human being on this planet doing that.
This was a big game of chess between Claudia and Lestat. That was the second chess match that she won.
I mean, Claudia obviously was the driving force for most of the episode because it's her plans to do the big Mardi Gras party, to have Lestat be named the Raj. Can't pick Louis because he just bumbled the kill so badly. Intentionally, obviously, right? Lestat, of course, is amazing. For me, though, the big crescendo is the vampire Armand. That is now setting the stage for season two. And he is now going to take so much more of a central role, I think. This is the big question, because we all knew Lestat, they were going to try to kill Lestat. We knew it from the books. We knew it from the movie. We knew also that they would ultimately fail. We did not know that at a certain point where she's just going to start fucking levitating in the library. And like, oh, I guess it's time now to reveal who Rashid is, or the vampire Armand, who now we have all kinds of theories and questions about. And how much of a role is he playing in this entire interview, the backstory and everything? Is he really more of a puppet master manipulating Louis, manipulating Daniel, battling with Lestat? How much of it has really just been Armand this whole time? But for me, that's my standout because, of course, we invested so much in the identity of Rashid. We knew he was important. We knew he was somebody. We kind of dismissed him being Armand for, I think, decent reasons. But now that he's been revealed as Armand, now we're going to see how they move this story forward and explain all the hints that they've dropped about him. And that's what I'm really excited for season two.
I think the reason why we dismissed him being Armand is because it's stupid. That's my second least favorite thing that they've done with this show, only behind Claudia's sexual assault. I just feel like they were planting little red herrings here and there to try to make us think that he was somebody else, with the gloves and the contacts. And I know maybe they have a good reason and we don't know it yet. Why not just make him be Armand? Why go through all of that to trick the audience? I just didn't like it.
But let's say my theory had been correct and he was David.
I would have liked that better because there was mystery around it. This is like, why was he hiding his hands? I really thought, and I still believe, did they put that line in there about the gloves with Antoinette and Lestat to throw everybody off? Because I'm telling you, it was so intentional. It felt to me anyway, intentional. He said gloves are meant to hide things.
Well, and I mean, it could be intentional, but it was hiding
his vampire claws.
It was hiding his vampire claws.
I just think the way they did it, for me, I didn't like it. I would have liked it if we knew he was not, you know, Rashid from Dubai.
It doesn't make sense that Armand would be acting as a servant.
Right.
I guess they're going to have to explain to us what that's all about. And maybe we want to talk about, maybe this is a good way to segue into character arc. Because certainly Rashid has had one.
Yeah. Right?
He's gone from being Louis' personal assistant to now he's the vampire Armand and the love of Louis' life, which caused...
blink if you are being held prisoner.
So should we start out with Rashid? And
sure,
talk about his character arc. Exactly what I said. He's gone from being Louis' assistant to now the love of his life and the vampire Armand, who is a pretty bad dude.
He's a murder goblin.
He had a rough childhood, no doubt.
Right.
But he, a harsh dude. And we will learn more, I assume, about him and his backstory in the next series. Why did they have him as his assistant? I don't understand. I think he was just one big Easter egg and we were all supposed to be guessing at him.
I have a thought. Obviously, there's a past there with Daniel, Louis, and Armand. They met in the 70s. We don't know whether it's still going to be that Daniel and Armand had this relationship in the past as they did in the book.
He would have recognized it.
Daniel was drunk and he was high.
Plus, you could forget a night, but I don't think people forget an entire relationship.
Well, right. Let's not forget, Armand is a super powerful vampire. I would not put it past him in any way to have
fucked with his memory.
And now it's only starting to come back in these dreams. I don't know this for sure. This is just my rough guess because, you know, it all remains to be seen. But it could have been that he wanted to see how much Daniel knew. I assume he could have just read his mind. But let's see where they go from it. I don't think it's stupid to hide his identity if, you know, he doesn't trust Daniel. So I'm willing to wait and see why they did that.
I said at the beginning, you know, they answered some questions, but they left some threads.
First of all, it was entertaining as fuck to try to sit around and try to figure out who Armand was.
I'm not disputing that. I'm super fine with that. Yeah. I'm just saying, though, to me personally, it was a letdown for it to just be Armand the whole time. It still makes no sense. They may have a very good reason why, and I'm sure they do. And hopefully we'll find that out. But I don't think it's going to be as satisfying as I personally will need it to be. But maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before.
The question about Daniel not remembering Armand, the possibility that did that relationship actually happen between them? I'm going to say that relationship has not happened between them. There was no sense of attraction for Armand with Daniel. The attraction seemed to be between Louis and Daniel in the flashback, right? And Armand was like, yeah, you go and have your fun. In present day, Armand didn't like Daniel. You could tell that he had kind of an antagonistic relationship towards Daniel, and he's mad at him
for his treatment of Louis.
And now in this most recent episode, he was very upset. I mean, it caused him to take off those gloves and float up to the ceiling. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he told him he's going to be ashamed when he hears the full story. So I'm interested to hear that.
Oh my God. Of all the vampires you really can't trust, Armand is high up there on the list.
He is just a horrible, horrible
dude. These are all so unreliable.
All these vampires are horrible people. You know, we'll talk about this when we talk about Claudia's arc. I know people want to be sympathetic to her, and that is fine, but just because she's a victim doesn't mean she's not a bad person and doesn't mean that she's not manipulative. She was from day one.
Not from day one. She was a child who was turned into a vampire. What else can you do? You have to learn how to.
She was having a rough life. People like that have to learn certain things in order to survive. True. But let's talk. You want to talk about Claudia?
Yeah, let's do her arc.
All right. So her arc, she went from Louis' caretaker in the previous episode and just trying to escape, and then slowly becomes the mover and shaker behind this entire murder plot so that she and Louis can get away. I mean, it was masterful, right? It was an episode of Mission Impossible. The only thing that didn't happen at the end was she pulled off a rubber mask and she was really Martin Landau or something, right? It had exactly the kind of element that you see in a Mission Impossible episode where there's a problem, there's a plot to try to solve it. The bad guy appears to have figured out the plot, but whoa, they're one step ahead and then they defeat you at the end.
Polish immortal.
So Lestat, again, overcome by his greed, he's like, okay, they're trying to kill me. Instead of just going out and doing them in or confronting them, I'm going to enjoy this party. I'm going to make them go through this whole plot. And then, you know, I have my big reveal where I have my junior vampire here to help me out. Well, mm-hmm. That didn't really work out. Once again, Lestat is trapped by Claudia's understanding of how he works. And if you're going to be a manipulator, you have to understand people. And she has his number.
Lestat had Claudia's number, in my opinion, because if you think about it, you know, at the beginning, she talked about how they weren't allowed to sleep separately. They had to sleep together. They fed together. And, you know, and I think Louis said, you know, we endured. And I realized he did that to them on purpose, not so much to keep an eye on them. He knew they were going to be communicating telepathically, and he forced them that he was with them constantly, so that they had no choice. Like, they couldn't sneak away and plot verbally, and they couldn't, you know, he couldn't use Antoinette. Yeah, she was a couple steps ahead of him, but he was not that far behind.
But in the end, she had Lestat figured out where she just didn't quite recognize what was going to happen was Louis. She was so focused on understanding and outplaying Lestat, and she was so sure of Louis that Louis was an afterthought, kind of. She thought, well, he'll go along with what I need him to do.
Right. And obviously that was a massive miscalculation on her part. I mean, we've never seen Louis get physical with Claudia. He took her by the throat and threw up against the wall. So there was just nowhere for that girl to go. So yeah, she definitely underestimated him, because I didn't think that he had it in him to mistreat her that way. His love for Lestat just is unmatched.
I know that fans and stands want it to be this deep and abiding love, but it's certainly a bond.
Him?
I certainly think he believes that he does. I don't know that this is love, though. It's so toxic.
It's vampire love,
it's
baby.
Vampire love.
This is what it looks like. When murder is your love language, this is what it looks like.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it's not a fucked up relationship, but I do think that he does love him.
We've talked about that before, about people in toxic relationships where bad things are going on. That doesn't mean that the feelings aren't real.
Right.
Like, you love it. You love
their love because we think it's fucked up.
And again, like Mark said, it's vampire love. But Claudia, in the end, I think she's walking away from it. We hear Claudia's voice from Daniel. He's reading her diaries. And there's a screen capture of her diary entry where some pages have been torn out, presumably by Armand. But Daniel says she hated your guts for a while. And her entry about Louis is all about how Louis is so tormented over what they've done that they're not really enjoying what's happening in Europe. They go to Europe. They're going to go and look for the origin.
That worked out great.
She's now with Louis, who's very mopey and also fearful. Like she writes about Louis being afraid.
Well, especially when they learn the rules of vampirism. Rule one, don't kill other vampires. Ooh. Shit.
That's a problem.
We done fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. So they've left her in a precarious spot. She knows she didn't burn him. So she knows as well as Louis does that he's potentially still going to be alive and coming for them.
Yeah.
They're together in Europe.
They're
and this
on the
is
run.
Where it kind of leaves Claudia's arc. You know, she's free, but is she? Not really. The escape was only a partial escape.
Well, let's talk about Lestat.
I don't know that he had much of an arc, kind of like that episode where we talked about where Louis didn't have an arc and I thought that he did. I don't know that Lestat did. I think he was just the normal cunning and conniving Lestat that he's always been. I mean, he was, you know, next level. I think he was really smart with his plan, or tried to be, except, you know, we did see that he has this wherewithal to keep it together while in the presence of two people trying to kill him.
I think that he was at least briefly, and with Lestat is definitely briefly, humbled. He's so superior. He's much more powerful. He's much more knowledgeable. He's made both of these vampires, and he believed himself to have outsmarted Claudia. He believed that ultimately he would win. At the moment when he's on the carpet and Louis has his blade to his throat, he doesn't know he's going to survive that. He doesn't know that Louis is going to just put him out with the garbage instead of incinerating him like a smart murderer. And at the end, he's just kind of like, you know what? I'm glad it was you, you know, not Claudia, I think is what he meant. Let's do it. Let's be done with it. And so I think he was humble. I think he went from supremely confident, arrogant, to briefly being humbled. Now, he's Lestat. He's going to be right back at the peak of arrogance again as soon as he finishes off all the rats in the dump.
Getting grabbed for that rat.
Yeah. He's like, that rat had no chance against me. But, I mean, that's one of his character flaws, right? Is his supreme arrogance, and not unjustified, right? He is an extremely powerful vampire, but he got outsmarted by what is effectively a 14-year-old girl.
Think of how pissed off he must be sitting in that coffin,
please,
having to eat rats after mocking Louis for, you know, decades for
absolutely
living off of rats, right? Like the irony of that is pretty
like,
great.
Oh, look how mighty have fallen. Yes.
You see the gamut of Lestat's different sides to his personality. He's multifaceted, and he's always been multifaceted. You know, he's this victim of something terrible that happened to him. Even in his human life, he had a rough human life, and he had the terrible situation with Magnus and becoming a vampire and then immediately an orphan vampire.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, he is very domineering and controlling. And we see that, and he's lording it over the poor encyclopedia salesman. Joanne, you're right. He knows that they want to be away from him. Right. But ultimately, what this showed me was that Lestat has his overwhelming thing is not to be alone.
Right.
Lestat doesn't like to be abandoned. And he talks about that. This is why I do not like to be abandoned in the previous episode. Okay.
It never occurred to him just to be a decent guy.
Right. Right? No, because he doesn't know how to do relationship. He doesn't know how to teach how to be a vampire. I mean, I think he just kind of goes through life and just does what he does, like where the whim takes him. But he's trying to control the vampires and control his companions and keep his companions. And at the end, right up until the point Louis cuts his throat, he's still trying to control his companions. And he is saying, now we've got this other one, Antoinette, who, by the way, is the stand-in in this, in the series, it's Antoinette, the woman. Right. And then in the book, it was the music teacher, because remember he taunted Claudia in the book and said, I can make you a brother. You're too spoiled. He'd be a better vampire. Some would be a better vampire than you are.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's trying to control his companions. And at the end, he's still trying to control his companions. He's just created another new one. Lestat is this kind of chronic companion creator.
Yeah.
Is that
and he, I don't know. I guess it is. If it isn't, it is now. I've coined it.
Do you think that's an Easter egg for the movie Weird Science?
I'll tell you this though. That was the flaw in his plan of, we're going to kill Claudia, Louis, and Antoinette's going to be our new companion.
She'll suit our lifestyle. What the hell, Lestat? Yeah. You know, he has no thinking
with your dick, Lestat.
Right. And he has no,
he's doing.
But that is where I keep my brain.
He has no sensitivity for Louis's feelings. Not at all. Not in the least.
He's not especially empathic.
No, he's not empathetic. But let's just speculate about this. It may be that Louis wouldn't have gone through it at all if all of a sudden Antoinette hadn't shown up. Because remember, when they're doing the dance, the shocking dance in the middle of the ball where there are two men dancing and then kiss, Louis says, you know, like he was deep into it. Claudia had to intervene and dance and then bite him, actually.
Like, snap out of it, bro.
Wake up.
Yeah, remember we're murdering this guy later?
Could you imagine the balls on him, though? Like, first, it wasn't bad enough. You put your whore on the album, the song Come to Me, and now you want to bring your whore to Buenos Aires? Jeez, like, get it together, Lestat.
His character, a bunch of facets were on display. I don't disagree with you, Mark, that he had a moment of humility, kind of. Generally, I would say it was just Lestat from beginning to end. Lestat is just kind of this monolith. So are we done with Lestat?
I think so. Joanne's not done with Lestat, but yeah.
I mean, okay, so
she's standing him still hardcore.
Louis's arc?
Louis. What is going on with you, bro? All right, so Louis is all over the place. He loves Lestat. He hates Lestat. He takes Lestat back. He's now been convinced to kill Lestat. He decides at the end he's not really going to kill Lestat, even though he mostly killed Lestat. And now he's running away with Claudia. And then in the future, he's telling this story about how Lestat was the love of his life. Well, turns out, no. Now the love of my life is the vampire Armand.
Is Louis a fuckboy at this point?
I think he's a fuck toy is what he is. He is a soft ass bottom is what he is. He is just, just willing. Yeah, I mean, he's just looking for a daddy.
Right up until
the point. Well, he might kill you a little bit, right? But not all the way.
Louis is complex.
Yeah. And of course, you want characters to be complex, right? Yeah. You do. You don't really want them to be monolithic. Whichever way the wind is blowing is where Louis is going to go that day.
I guess it was last week that I was saying that I had to reframe how I was watching the show. I had to think about it more as a relationship story rather than an existential crisis story.
Right.
Which is really how I read the books. The books were really just like, I'm a vampire. How I suffer as a vampire. What does it mean?
I agree with your basic premise. I think that the books were existential vampire questions as told through a relationship story. And so the relationship was secondary really to the kind of the vampire existential angst. Mm-hmm. Now it's flip-flopped. It's a relationship story told through the lens of the vampire, you know, struggles and existential angst for Louis and whoever.
I think it's smart TV to do that, because if you look at modern day vampire stories, take your, you know, True Blood, Vampire Diaries, etc., Twilight, they're all love stories. You know, fundamentally, there's obviously, you know, we discovered there's a lot more to them than that. And there is a lot more to this story than that, because I think it will bring in viewers that aren't familiar with the books.
I agree.
And it's a bigger question, right? You want, I mean, if you want something to run for 4, 5, 6 seasons, you can't just be doing vampiric navel gazing the whole time. Not a big enough subject.
So my thinking here about Louis, though, is that this episode really shows that Louis has no idea who he is. Louis does not. Oh, yeah. Louis, from the start, he was struggling initially with the many sort of hats that he had to wear. You know, being
that one hat with the nice ribbon on it.
Being a gay man of color. I think that when Lestat said to him, I will give you this dark gift and it's going to make things easier for you, be able to be who you are. He still didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And he still now in this episode, it just shows that he has no idea who he is.
You're right.
And he has no idea what he really wants because he doesn't know who he is. And that makes him dangerous.
That reminds me of when we talked about consent. Can you really give consent to be turned because you don't know what you're signing up for? And
right.
That's right on track with Louis, just willy-nilly going into something, not really knowing what the outcome will be or how he's going to fare through it.
Well, and he was seduced.
You mean manipulated?
Consent is not really their biggest thing.
No, it's not. We did discuss it. And Lestat gives lip service to the idea that he is asking. He is providing him with an opportunity to make a choice. As we know, Lestat was really love bombing. He was really making it sound extremely wonderful. Come with me and you'll be able to be all the beautiful things that you are and all that.
Right. It wasn't like really a very informed decision that Louis made. Mm-mm.
Louis had no way of knowing. Louis didn't see the reality of it. He didn't say to Louis, hey man, I want to bring you into the dark gift, but here's what we're going to do. I'm going to take you out with me at night and I'm going to let you watch me eating people, yeah. You know, like he didn't show him. And let me talk to you about how long forever actually is,
right,
and how lonely this can be. Right. He doesn't talk to him about that. He makes it sound as you would. Right. Because he's seducing him. So for me, the thing that really, I guess, stood out the most about Louis was showing that he didn't know who he was. He still doesn't know who he was, and not knowing who he is, who it makes him susceptible to narcissists. Louis is like the classic, what, you know, like whoever might fall, a borderline or a codependent.
Oh, he's definitely codependent.
Who can fall victim.
Well, we'll find out if he's really codependent.
Right. Empaths. Empaths can fall victim to narcissists. And he is definitely that. He just doesn't know who he is and he doesn't know how to be happy in and of himself. And he still doesn't. You want to think he does because he's living in that awesome apartment.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet pad.
They filmed all the scenes of, you know, the New Orleans stuff first. They didn't even know that Eric Bogosian was going to be playing Daniel Malloy while they were filming. And all of that was shot afterwards.
That is, right? To me, that's one of the most impressive things. It shows how they can compartmentalize those scenes. Okay, today we're going to shoot your death scene. Okay, tomorrow it's going to be a birthday party. All right, fine with that too. Great. Do I get the pink top hat? Okay, cool.
Let's talk about Daniel.
Daniel's learning some shit, man. He's getting mind fucked pretty badly right now.
I don't know if he, I mean, I think that he knows that he is, though. That's the thing. He knows that something is going on. He may be a little bit behind. He's us. He's the audience.
Right.
I know that there's something up here. I just don't know quite exactly what it is yet. Daniel in the series is by far the better version of Daniel. The beautiful thing is that Daniel from the book was a stan of Louis.
You're amazing. Make me one like you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this Daniel is not.
Younger Daniel was in awe of Louis at the bar.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. He was a stan. He was a stan. And the fact
you were saying in the book.
Exactly. Younger Daniel was a stan. In the current day series, this Daniel is actually a reporter.
Yeah.
He is actually interrogating.
Well, he's been through it, you know.
Yeah. And you can see that he's questioning things. He's not just accepting things as truth, and he pushes back towards.
Do you know what Daniel's superpower is? Bullshit meter.
It is.
He has a finely tuned bullshit meter, and he's being, you know, given all this fancy food and da 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 and shown magical powers. And he's like, you know, I think you're full of shit. Right here.
Yeah.
And even though you could murder me with a glance, I'm going to call you on it, possibly smack you across the face. I'm planning that for later.
And when you float up off the ground, I'm just going to look at you and go,
guess you're a vampire then, hey, bro.
This series doesn't work as well if the Daniel isn't Daniel.
Oh, it doesn't really work. And then it's just a fantasy movie.
Yeah.
You know, our fantasy show.
I mean, he even said to him in this episode, like, oh, was it raining, Louis?
Poking at him.
Yeah, he's like, Louis, was it raining, Louis?
Yeah, he's like, you know, something about like, you know, am I just another whore that you're using to talk to? Yeah. Like, well, I want $10 million because.
Yeah.
You know, if you want me to be a whore, that's my price.
Remember when Louis went to talk to Lily, he did that as subterfuge, as if he was going to call on Lily for sex. Right. But all he did was sit and talk with her.
Yeah.
And he is calling Louis out on the fact that you still can't be yourself. You still don't know who you are. You're still paying a whore, me, to sit in a room with you and you tell this story. And I'm not going to let you get away with not telling me the real story.
I'm going to hold up a mirror and you're going to see who the fuck you are.
Right.
And maybe admit it. Lestat, tragic flaw is arrogance, right? And greed. Louis, tragic flaw, lack of, you know, self-knowledge and identity. What's Claudia's?
She either underestimated Louis or overestimated her charm with Louis.
And I think she also fell in love.
Kind of a combination
I like that. I like that read, Joanne.
Everyone knows Pan American's Strato Clipper is the most luxurious way to travel to the Caribbean and South America. Now introducing Clipper Cargo, the fastest and most reliable way to send freight to international destinations. From January to March, Pan Am is offering discounted rates on freight shipments to Havana. Even though it's cargo, we treat each parcel, container, and box as if it were a living passenger. Special requests accommodated at negotiated rates. Pan Am, America's airline to the world.
So, Mark, you failed this week on body count.
Well, you know, I'm a very busy man.
I guess. Okay. So
I record like 17 podcasts.
You're going to have to fact check me. How about that? All right. You ready? Encyclopedia salesman.
Correct.
Bye-bye.
Cancer man.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
Then we go into some scenes where they are shown to be pursuing people, but we did not see the kill. So I did not count those people.
Yeah, I didn't count those either. Like balloon guy.
That lady, the drunken lady, and her husband.
Yeah, I didn't count those either.
Tom Anderson.
Bye, Tom.
Bye, Tom. See ya.
Super dead.
Tom, what was he doing having Louis and Lestat's picture still just at hand in his drawer? He hadn't seen them for, what did he say, 17 years? And
he's like, because he's freaked out by them.
Well, and he's suspicious. So
that was his proof to people. Maybe like somebody new came to town and he's like, don't fuck with those two. Yeah. Take a look at this.
Check it out. Here they were 17 years ago. Yeah. This is not even Photoshopped, bro.
So, chief of police.
Bye.
See ya.
Twin one, twin two. Opera lady.
Yep.
Dead.
Guy who looked like Tom. I don't know who he was. But that was the guy that Claudia attacked at the door. And I will say this. There are certain of the special effects that I feel look funny. When Claudia leapt at the guy and went flying through the air, that looked funny to me. I was
badass when she jumped off the balcony.
That was like
superhero jump. Yeah.
That was very, very cool.
That was Marvel Universe shit.
All right. Then Jaw guy.
Oh, that was a horrible way to die.
He dug his fingers in more. Oh,
yeah. You're not going to get the sexy bite on the neck. I'm going to rip your mandible off.
Yeah.
And show it to you.
Rip it off. And then did he drink? I closed my eyes. I couldn't watch that. But then
he held him up
and he tipped him like.
No, he
like
didn't. He went then and bit his neck. Then he went and
tipped
bit
him over like a.
No, he didn't bite his neck. He bit into the jaw hole.
It just went right in.
God, right, yuck. I thought that was in his neck. Okay.
And how hot was that scene when they turn the corner and they're all wearing white
and the blood dripping everywhere.
That was like a Western. Like
it was.
It was so badass.
Yeah, it was. They were the slow-mo.
It
was badass.
That scene for me was interesting because it mirrored a scene earlier in the episode where they're all three walking through the streets and Louis doing the voiceover and saying we were constantly together and we did everything. And it was like, looking down the street. Yep. That scene actually mirrored a scene earlier in the series when Louis and Lestat were walking down the street right after he turned Lestat. It was that same angle up shooting them. And they're kind of like at night.
It would have to be at night, wouldn't it? It's
terrific cinematography.
Yes.
All right. So after Jaw Guy, Antoinette.
Yeah. definitely dead.
That was beautiful. I enjoyed watching her fry on the grill.
And then the rat. The
rat's like, this is the greatest life. I'm here in the dump. And I, oh, what the fuck? And then chomp.
What I do want to point out, Claudia and Louis clasp hands in front of the incinerator in the same way that you see that similar shot of Louis and Armand clasping hands.
Yeah. Yes.
Good call.
At the very end.
Louis's very big on the hand holding.
Well, it's again, Louis
will just go with
Louis grabbing onto whoever the, any anchor, like, and Louis is kind of like the anchor that drags these people.
I feel like every year Louis sends whoever he's with a Valentine and says, you are my life preserver.
It's exactly right.
I love you and no one else.
Yeah.
Currently.
So, guys, I'm sad to see this season end, but it's been a really wild ride. Christina, what are your final thoughts?
It provided you with enough answers. Like, it would have made me crazy if the Rashid thing had not been resolved. Whether or not you're crazy about the way it's been resolved at this point, fair enough. But at least there was some resolution.
Yeah.
However, that resolution opens up this all these new doors of like, what the hell, you know, so
which is what you want,
which is exactly what you want. So it did everything.
Great episode. I agree with Christina that they gave us the one thing I think they had to do with in order to avoid being attacked with pitchforks and torches, which is at least answer who the fuck is Rashid. It's a pretty good reveal to have him just start floating up off the floor. It puts even more pressure on the Daniel character. I mean, he is now kind of the fulcrum on which this story is turning, and we're going to see which way it goes. I'm excited for season two. I think that this series has made me more of a fan of this universe than the books ever did.
I just got to say, though, I feel like the two of you are a little salty about me not liking the Armand reveal. And now I'm like kind of nervous that I'm going to get some serious freaking.
Oh my God.
And I don't care, but whatever.
I like that you have a different perspective. I think that's what makes me.
Unlike Louis, I know who I am. Yeah. So
that's okay. But when you do inevitably get roasted online,
don't cry to you.
Don't cry to me. I'm going to be right there with them. Oh, I'm going to be
open up like a troll account to come out.
I'm going
to
be pouring the gasoline on the wood beneath your feet.
I don't care, Mark.
He will troll you from his own account. He doesn't need
to. I don't do fake accounts.
No, but for me,
your face.
You know, shut up. Okay. I wasn't crazy about the reveal, but I agree with the both of you that I'm glad that we know. Even though I'm not happy with the way it's not that I'm not happy that it's Armand. I'm just not happy with the way they did it to only be Armand. And I don't mean to minimize him. I don't know if I'm saying it right. But anyway,
did you want him to be more than one character?
Shut up. So
she needs like a bigger deal. Like it would be even more.
Exactly. I just thought it would be something more elaborate than just Armand. But anyway, for me, the episode as a whole, I absolutely loved it. I the costuming in the scene of the Mardi Gras party was just incredible for a season finale. Just like you guys said, it was everything that you wanted it to be. You got some answers. They kind of left you hanging with more stuff. It's a little difficult because it's not like it's a show where we don't know what's going to happen. We know what was going to happen before they even aired 1 minute of it. We knew we would be here at this moment where Louis and Claudia tried to kill Lestat. But this has been a really good show. And this episode, this finale did not disappoint. I absolutely loved it. My girl, Claudia. Oh my God. I can't wait to talk about her next week.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what to expect going forward from our podcast. We are going to continue podcasting. We are not going away. We have a couple of months between now and when the Mayfair Witches starts. And we are going to recap the Mayfair Witches as a part of this podcast. In the interim, we are going to do a couple of different things. We have some interesting episodes planned. Mark has alluded to one, which is we are going to have our friend Steph from Psychocinematic. She is a practicing, I believe, psychologist in Australia. She has a fantastic podcast. She'll tell us about that when she comes on. But she is going to come and do a little bit of analysis on the personality types in these in this series.
I think that would be really helpful.
I think it would be very interesting. Yeah. Now, you can take it with a grain of salt, of course, and these are fictional characters and vampires at that.
But that's what she does.
People are relating this to their real life. And I mean, a lot of people were upset about, you know, the domestic violence and the sexual assault and the portrayal of you know, Lestat as being a mean bad guy. Why they didn't think he was a mean bad guy, I'll never know. But it's going to be really nice to hear that validation about, you know, how it relates to ourselves as well.
It looks like we're going to do an episode on the history in which these characters were placed. And so we're going to have someone come on and speak to that. I'm particularly interested in that.
You've got to be super psyched about that.
I'm a historian. And don't forget, next week we have our season wrap up. Tally up the body count.
And then we're going to do an episode about antiheroes. The antihero as somebody that we cheer for is not all. I mean, it's been around for a while now on television, but there's a history of it on television. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, but really center it on the vampires. So and then we're also going to look at some of the books. I think we're going to do The Vampire Lestat. And I think that we are going to do The Witching Hour. We'll fill all of the spaces between now and the launch of The Mayfair Witches in early January. So,
and if anybody wants to DM me the cliff notes on either of those books, I will pay you accordingly. Thank you.
All right. Well, Joanne, you want to take us out?
All right, guys. I think that's a wrap on episode 7, The Thing Lay Still. Thank you for taking the time tonight to listen to us. We appreciate it. You can find us on Twitter at @vampire_insider if you want to continue the conversation with us. You can also follow us on our personal accounts. I am at @justblockme_1. Christina is at @ChristinaGenX. And Mark is at @MarkEatsPeach. You can also find us on Reddit, put in Vampire Insider, and Facebook as well. Same thing. Very easy to find, Vampire Insider. Hope you guys enjoyed us. Thank you guys so much. Have a great night.
Bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
I think she's still around. I don't know why. So, I don't know why Louis talks about her in the past tense, though.
Well, but yeah, again, because she's dead.
That could just be a red herring. Like, there
could be. You know who disagrees with you? Everybody. All of Reddit.
I don't care.
Everybody's like, yeah, that is such a
sin. Reddit.
Now, and, you know, with this show, you know, anything could happen, obviously, and that would be, you know, super interesting to see how they do it.
I know what could happen in season 2. Armand rips off his rubber face and it's Claudia.
It's me, Claudia, you guys.
And Sam Reed is just so list. I mean, like, he just embodies him. I can't. He's just, I think you see how much Sam empathizes with Lestat.
He is swimming in the sea of Lestat.
He is. He really
and he is luxuriating in the bath of Lestat.
He definitely is.
Vampire Insider is a Conceptual Ozone LLC podcast produced and edited by Christina LaRusso. Please direct all business inquiries to vampireinsider@gmail.com. All rights reserved.